This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
And welcome to the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. And you're joining us tonight, you're joining Mark and...
Claudine.
Claudine.
And Rachel have made it into the second studio.
Wow, that was running from one studio to the other.
Yes.
Literally.
Good exercise.
You've had a busy night.
I have.
You're only halfway through.
I know. Are you sick of my voice yet? No.
Hopefully not. So we have a busy night on the Spirit Lounge tonight. We're going to be, later on tonight, we're going to be talking to Carly Greening, who's a missionary in Africa. But before we get to there, we have a couple of holidays of the week to talk about and a few other bits and pieces along the way. So,
are you going to sing a holiday theme tonight for us, Mark?
In respect to our faithful listeners, I think that's probably not the best idea. And you do it so well. It's a highlight of the show. So why don't you go for it?
I need to come up with something new and different. I need like a bit of a drum beat and be like, holy day of the week, yeah. Something like that. Does that work?
That was wonderful.
All right,
can
here
you
it is.
That? We still have to make that recording, that booking to record a few different versions of the song.
10 different versions of Holy Days of the Week.
But hold on to that, because I think we had some announcements to begin with about events of today.
We do. So this is something that was brought to my attention this afternoon as people around Melbourne and any other capital city or anywhere in Australia really would probably know that there is some important news going on about refugees and there being 267 people, including 37 babies, who are refugees that could be sent to detention centres in Nauru. We were lucky enough to see the march out the window tonight. It was incredible. You might have heard it if you were listening to the Chris and Cam show because it was quite loud. So Brisbane's St John's Anglican Cathedral, amongst other churches, have declared a place of sanctuary for asylum seekers facing deportation after yesterday's High Court decision allowed for their imminent removal to Nauru. So basically, the orders have been left for them to leave Australia within 72 hours. So basically, churches... starting with the Anglican Church, but there's been uniting churches as well that have come on board, and I'm sure by this evening many, many other churches have come on board to make their churches as a sanctuary for asylum seekers to stay, and so they don't get deported. Is that the correct word
that
to
would
use?
Be right, yep.
Yeah, so it's a hugely significant action for any Australian church to take, and historically churches have afforded sanctuary to those seeking refuge from brutal and oppressive forces. You can get more information about it from the Australian Church's Refugee Task Force, which is www.acrt.com.au. And if you're part of a church, you can pass this information on to your churches to become a sanctuary for asylum seekers, and you can sign up on this website. And if you are a refugee and you may face deportment, you can go on here and see local churches in any part of Australia that... may be able to give you refuge and sanctuary. So big
thanks,
news.
Yeah. I mean, thanks for sending that along, Rachel. As we've said, it is churches have had a long tradition of giving sanctuary to people on the run from the law for whatever reason, legitimate or not. And it's really great to see churches pretty much uniting on this issue.
Yeah, definitely. There's so many things that pull churches apart, but this is an incredible opportunity for churches to work together for the good of Australia as a whole.
And I think I heard on the Joy News broadcast earlier that the immigration minister said that the churches, that they're not going to be breaking into churches to pull refugees out. So that's a hopeful sign.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my understanding is there is some sort of historic precedent that might make the legalities of that somewhat complicated. So it's going to be an interesting few days. And it's a great, as you say, it's a great initiative of a number of churches. I know there's a Baptist church, I believe, in Coburg that has offered itself as a sanctuary. So it's a great thing to see so many different denominations combining to one cause, which is, you know, often what religions aspire to do, but are not so great at achieving it all the time. So it's really great to see this great initiative happening here in our country. It's
definitely
great.
And as it unfolds over the next few days and even the next week, we're going to have updates on our Facebook and Twitter, no doubt. So please jump on board and have a look and just do your part to help wherever you can as well, because who knows, maybe these churches will need help feeding the people as well. So whatever we can do to lend a hand, you know, do something nice. Be a good citizen.
And I think we've had the holiday dates even. So Rachel's been talking a lot tonight, so I won't get her to sing it again. But it does seem, does feel like good timing as the Christian churches are leading up to one of the holiest seasons of the year. That's the season of Lent, which comes up to, which is the 6.5 weeks preceding Easter. So it's really a time when churches and Christians pull back a bit and think about our faith, think about what the Christian gospel is about, what the message is, and engage in reflection and action. So there's a few Christian observances that are related to this time, which really take Christians from one extreme to the other in terms of the life of the church and in different ways of recognizing the faith. So the first that's coming up is the Feast of the Transfiguration, and as with some other Christian feasts, we can't quite agree on the date for this. So there's a couple of different dates. The traditional one is the 6th of August. Yes, typical Christians not agreeing about things. So the traditional date for the Transfiguration is the 6th of August, but some churches have started celebrating it on the last Sunday before Lent, and that's this Sunday coming up. So the Transfiguration celebrates a turning point in the gospel stories when Jesus takes three of his disciples to the top of a mountain and appears in a kind of mystical vision with Moses and Elijah by his side, Moses the Jewish leader and Elijah the prophet. And the disciples hear a voice, which I take to be the voice of God, saying, "This is my son, the beloved, listen to him." So this is really a point where you start to get the idea that Jesus isn't just another prophet. He's not just some kind of political revolutionary, but he's the son of God. And the rest of the gospel stories is trying to work out what that actually means. So that's this Sunday. And after that, we're coming up to Lent, which is the season of fasting and sacrifice before Easter. But because it's such a penitential period, we need a big fat party to prepare us for that. So Lent begins on Ash Wednesday. That's Wednesday next week. So the day before Ash Wednesday has a few different names: Shrove Tuesday, Pancake Tuesday, Fat Tuesday, or Mardi Gras. Mardi Gras being French for Fat Tuesday. So because traditional Lenten practices involve giving up excessive eating and drinking, this Tuesday is like the last chance to pig out before the long period of fasting that comes. So the tradition of Fat Tuesday has then continued even for people who don't necessarily follow it up with fasting and penitence. And there's a few different examples of this. The Rio Carnival is one of the biggest festivals of this period, and it's actually starting on Friday and continues until Wednesday. In English-speaking countries, this Tuesday's become associated with pancakes for some reason. So Joy sponsors the Pancake Parlour have been celebrating Pancake Tuesday for many years. They used to hold a pancake race in the city, and clergy from St. Paul's Cathedral would bless the runners before the race, though they're not doing that anymore, but they're still doing other special events for pancakes, including, I think this year, they're giving out free pancakes to commuters at Flinders Street Station. So,
even if I'm not commuting, I'm going to go there and get me some pancakes.
Taking the train into this, I think they're really small ones, like bite-sized pancakes, but still, free pancakes on Tuesday morning. And Mardi Gras has become a big festival, and I was actually looking this up before, trying to work out the connection between the religious Mardi Gras and festivals like the Sydney Mardi Gras. And slightly embarrassed to say I haven't found a connection. So
just big party.
It may just be that. It's a great big party. So, but if you happen to know how the Sydney Mardi Gras chose to adopt Mardi Gras, do send us a text to 0427JOY949 or email us at onair@joy.org.au and tell us what is the connection between Sydney Mardi Gras and Fat Tuesday.
I wonder whether it comes out of the New Orleans Mardi Gras, which is kind of a bit of mixture of Christianity and voodoo and a whole heap of things mixed in together. And I wonder whether there's sort of a bit of a sideways in towards the LGBTI rights, whether it comes out of that. I'm just wondering whether there might be a bit of that might be the link across.
Isn't there a Southern Decadence? Is that the LGBT kind of response to Mardi Gras in New Orleans? Sort of showing our ignorance here, but there is, it may be just, it's a big party that happens in the weeks prior to spring in the Northern Hemisphere, so that might be part of it as well.
It also could be a little bit tongue-in-cheek, taking a religious festival and flipping
making
it on its
gay,
head.
Yeah.
Well, since the Christians started off taking other people's festivals, why not?
Why not?
And you're listening to The Spirit Lounge. And tonight we're talking, at the moment we're talking about Mardi Gras, Transfiguration, Ash Wednesday.
It's all the holy days, all
Shrove Tuesday. It's all happening now, isn't it, really? And you were saying before, Claudine, about how the clergy of St. Paul's used to bless some runners in a pancake race in Melbourne.
I never actually got to see it, but I can't even flip a pancake standing still, so I don't know how you would race with pancakes.
Well, you know, funnily enough, I've actually raced in a pancake race, and I don't think I could flip a pancake either. But the story goes that many years ago, when I was a student, and when you're a student, you'll do anything for a bit of money.
You get money for it.
I got money for it. Yeah, but you've got to listen to why. The reason I got paid for it. I used to work for a supermarket chain, and our mascot was a rooster. And one of the gigs that I managed to somehow get was I used to be the store mascot. So every Shrove Tuesday, the pancake parlour used to run a pancake race, flipping pancakes on the street, main street of town where I grew up. And they would get all the local mascots from the local football club, or there was a 10-pin from a bowling alley. There was me dressed up as a rooster. And the idea was that you could just imagine it. There's me as a rooster. There's an Easter bunny who didn't have a tail because some child had torn it off the day before.
Only a few weeks early.
Yeah. You know, there was a duck, a 10-pin. There was probably a chocolate bar of some description and goodness knows what else, all dressed up, running along trying to flip pancakes whilst doing it.
So you've got the pan and a... Is it an already cooked pancake, or is your pan just hot? Or like, how does this work?
How does it work? They were cold pans and they were pre-cooked pancakes because the thing is, you can't
prepared
see.
Earlier.
So you're looking through two tiny little eyes about 5 centimetres in front of your face. So you can't see where you're going. It was hot.
And
did you have
big goofy feet?
I had it was the full shebang. So it was a rooster in a pair of overalls, big feet. Photo in the local newspaper.
Action shot while you're flipping.
Look, there was no flipping going on. It was enough of a challenge to stay upright and not run into another mascot, and there to be carnage in the main street of town with heads rolling off or whatever. It would have been quite horrific.
Since the bunny already lost its tail, who knows what else?
The bunny had already lost its tail. The rooster was still intact and did manage to make it. I think it was won by the 10-pin. from memory, but you'd have to ask my mum. I think she was the only spectator for the whole event. It was quite horrific.
So there were more races than actual spectators.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. But anyhow, look, it's something that, you know, it's a great story that I have lived to tell the tale of, and sort of gets into Pancake Tuesday. You wonder why it's Pancake Tuesday? Simple answer is Lent. You need to give something up. Traditionally, you'd give up sugar. It's something sweet, something that it was a bit of a luxury. So what do you put in pancakes? Sugar. So it's a way to use up your sugar.
Oh. Of course, before...
If you want...
No, you don't put sugar in the fridge. What am I talking about? you haven't used up sugar. You've still got this pile of sugar that you need to put into something before you give it up. So make a big pancake.
And then buy a lemon and put lemon and sugar on top.
Exactly. So there you go. So that's why you. Sugar. So that's the story behind pancakes for Shrove Tuesday.
And just to get onto that funny word Shrove, which is the past tense of Shrive, which is I think it's an old word for absolve, which is one thing people would get absolve of their sins before Ash Wednesday, or is it Easter? Don't ask me. I only have two-thirds of a degree.
aren't you supposed to be? Might be wrong here, but aren't you supposed to be repenting for your sins in the run-up to Easter?
Yep.
So that when Easter happens, being the holiest day of the Christian calendar, you are absolved of your sins for that time. That was my understanding. Might be wrong.
That's one understanding, but I think there's also part of the... I think there's absolution during Lent, but there's also this other, the shriving part, which comes on Tuesday. I'm on Shrove Tuesday. I'm making a fool of myself now, but you can be absolved multiple times.
Funny enough, in my very Christian upbringing, we didn't do things like Lent and celebrate Shrove Tuesday. Of course, Easter was huge in the church that I grew up in, but none of this pre-Easter celebrating was a thing.
Yeah, I think that just shows how diverse Christianity is. There's a lot of traditions that are traditional that make a big deal about preparation and you know, we have what we call the liturgical year, so there's it's a cycle of 3 years where you read certain parts of the Bible over the year and over the period of 3 years. So there's always certain readings that will come up at Easter. And so some churches have a thing called a lectionary, which is a list of all the Bible readings for each Sunday of the year. And whereas in other churches, that's there's more flexibility. There's, you know, people will preach a series of sermons on readings that they choose over a number of weeks. Whereas in the sort of liturgical traditions, they'll use a lectionary so that every church in that tradition is using the same reading every week.
Definitely. And something that just came to mind is if any of our listeners ever have a holy day or a tradition that they have been brought up with whatever religion or spirituality you may have followed, and we don't bring it up, please let us know. So you can email us at onair@joy.org.au or jump on our Facebook page, definitely. So the Spirit Lounge on Joy, and that will come to us and we can definitely talk about it because we don't want to miss any of it.
You can even tweet to us at Spirit Lounge Joy.
You can. And so if you're in the Twitter sphere, tweet at Spirit Lounge on Joy.
So we've talked a bit about sugar and fat and grease. And of course, the reason that some of us are eating a lot of sugar at this time is that we're about to give up sugar or fat or meat or alcohol or something else during the 40 days of Lent.
My partner likes to give up giving up things. That will be what he will tell me next week. I'm giving up things.
Well, you see, we've got these traditions and then there's these modern takes on the traditions. So the Catholic and Orthodox churches have rules about giving up meat or alcohol, but other people, I'll be giving up. People give up Facebook over Lent. I will probably be giving up computers or technology or social media for part of the time, but I can't do that all the time because I have to work in that field. But and we were wondering earlier whether Febfast was another of these secular adaptations of Lent, since a lot of people give up alcohol at this time. So it's we'll be talking about Lent and Easter in the following weeks as we come up to Easter, which is sort of what the whole point of this is. So on Wednesday coming up is Ash Wednesday, when some Christians will be going to church and having people put a smudge of ash on their foreheads and will be given the words, remember that you are dust and to dust you shall return. So that's beginning our period of repentance.
So thanks for joining us tonight, everyone. You are on the Spirit Lounge, and we are so lucky to have a very special guest. I can say all the way from Africa, because Carly has spent so much time in Africa in the last few years. So Carly's a missionary who's working in Arusha in Tanzania for the Joshua Foundation. So hi, Carly. Thanks for taking time whilst you're in Australia to speak with us.
Hi, how are you? No problem at all. It's great to be able to connect in with people and be able to connect in with your radio station and all of your listeners.
It's so good to have you. So how long are you actually in Australia for on this little break?
4 months is what I've been in Australia for. I'm at the tail end of my break. And so my furlough, which is time where I've been able to raise support and connect in with people and see family and friends. So I have just a couple of weeks left before I fly out again. So.
Oh, that's great. And I saw that you got to see some of your friends, good friends' weddings whilst you were here. So it was a very good time to come back to Australia, wasn't it?
Yes, it was a great time to be able to be back in Australia and just to be able to connect in with people and to be able to go to friends' weddings. And, it's always the things that you miss out on, but I'm thankful and thanking Jesus for being able to be a part of that right now here in Australia. So,
That's great. So some of our listeners may not know what a missionary is. So can you tell us a bit about what a missionary does and what led you to become a missionary and move to Africa?
Sure. So just like a definition of a missionary is, and it's a biblical term, and so it's from Matthew 28, verse 19 to 20, and you can also find it throughout other parts of the Bible. And it's a missionary is someone who simply believes that they're called by Jesus to go out and to do his work throughout all the nations. So for me, being a missionary, it's something that I became 4 years ago, and it's something that I think we are all called to when we know Jesus and when we know who he is in our lives. And so for me, that became when I started my journey going to Africa, and I believed that I was called to do something bigger in my life when I first went to Africa. That was actually back in 2007 when I very first went to Africa, and that's when I knew that I needed to do something bigger in my life than just stay in Australia. So I think in a shortened term of, the definition of what a missionary is, that's someone, who just goes out and who knows, who can go out to all nations and to be able to be that person. And that can be locally, that can be globally, and that can be, wherever you might be in the world. So,
great. So what led you to Africa? You said you went in 2007. So what took you there the first time?
Yeah, so the first time I went, it took me on a short-term mission trip, which a mission trip with the church that I go to. And so it took me there with a group of people, and we went for 3 weeks. And I just knew straight after that, when I got back in 2007, that I needed to go and I needed to do more in my life. And so, it was part of the church that was bringing me there first.
So what sort of stuff did you do during that first trip that you did as a group?
So in the very first trip, we went to Tanzania and we also went to Kenya. So in Tanzania, we were working with a group of people up in the foothills of Kilimanjaro. And then when we were in Kenya, we went to the Kibera slum, so one of the world's largest slums. So we spent time there and did work with the women, and we worked with people and children all those years ago. So,
And so when you decided that you felt the calling to be in Africa, what made you decide to go to Arusha and the Joshua Foundation?
I was not always with the Joshua Foundation, but I ended up moving across to the Joshua Foundation. I had known about the Joshua Foundation for quite some time, and I've known who they are. And just through a lot of prayer and just seeking God, I believed that that's where I was meant to be. And the Joshua Foundation, I can tell you a little bit about them.
Yes, please.
They are founded by a couple named Linda and Alan Stevenson, and they went across to Africa in 1988. And they had a vision to be able to set up and to train people, like nationals, to become leaders with integrity.
Wow.
They've set up a teacher's training college, and they now have two schools. The Joshua School of Arusha is their second school, and we work with children, and we have classes that are smaller sized. We do a lot with what we're doing. So,
and what's your role personally at the Joshua Foundation in Arusha?
Yep. So my role personally within the Joshua Foundation is to be working with teachers. Over the last 2 years, which is how long I've been there for, it's been that I've been a university student through Australia as well. So I've been studying via distance, and I've also been able to, in the interim, being working with our children in classrooms, and that's specifically with preschool. And when I go back this time, I'll be able to work with people who are our teachers, and I'll be training them up more in education. So education within the Joshua Foundation is a holistic approach to education. So it's learning and it's integrating people into the culture. So, yeah.
And you're on the Spirit Lounge, where we've been talking to Carly, who's been working as a missionary in Africa and is going to be going back in a couple of weeks. Carly, can you say what are the biggest challenges that you face working in Africa?
Yep. Some of the biggest challenges over the years living in Africa have been simple things like power. At times we have a lack of power, which can be a little bit challenging when you're trying to do university via distance.
Wow.
That's just one of the challenges. Some of the other challenges within the early stages have been the language barrier. The local language is spoken is Swahili, and at times through misinterpretation or just through, not understanding or not enough words, the language can sometimes be a little bit of a challenge.
So you speak Swahili?
Yes, I do. I speak enough to get by, but I still need to improve. Those challenges can always be overcome, and, you want to make sure that, you're trying to overcome the challenges, and so it's just continuing to work at them and not giving up. So, yeah.
So, Carly, what goals do you have, like working at the Joshua Foundation or just being in Africa as a missionary in general? What do you want to get out of it in the end?
Yep. So, in the end, my ultimate goal is to serve God with all that I have. And so that's my whole purpose of being there. My whole goal is to follow what I believe my calling is, and that's to be a missionary. Part of my other goal, which is more of a bigger scale, is and a more day-to-day scale, is that my goal is to work with the local Tanzanian teachers and children, particularly teachers, being able to train them within early childhood and to be able to equip them and empower them for the future. My goal, which has been more of a short-term goal, has been to finish my university degree as well, and just to integrate myself into the African culture and to just be, just to be really able to adapt and to be a part of the culture and to live as part of that. So they've been my goals, long-term and short-term.
So yeah. do you see yourself living in Africa for a long time?
Yes, I do. I see myself living in Africa for the next 5 to 8 years, at least, or until I feel like, my calling is up. But, yeah, the calling is definitely a long-term calling that I believe I'm called to be in Africa for. So,
The Arusha, is Arusha the name of the town, or I wasn't?
Yep, that's the name of the city. Yep,
city.
Yep.
And
Arusha is, yes.
And so you see yourself staying in the one place or possibly in other parts of Tanzania?
At this point, probably being in Arusha, and however that looks, I can definitely see myself being with the Joshua Foundation for the next few years at least. So, so that's definitely something that I can see.
So this question's kind of aimed towards the kids that you work with at the Joshua Foundation. So the type of education and, education that they get there, how would you compare that to education in Australia? Is it on par, or do you find that there are differences?
There are definitely differences, and within the Joshua Foundation, we are actually a training and model school. So, so our teachers and our classroom sizes are smaller, so therefore the children are getting really quality education. I would say that there are a lot of differences, but there are also a lot of similarities as well in the way that our teachers are trained through our college as well. Our children come from the local village, and they also come from town. So we get a mix of children, and so there are so many teachers that come. So many children that come from all over over Arusha, and they come from Muslim families, they come from Christian families, they come from like interdenominational families as well. I would say that our education within the Joshua Foundation for our school, because it is a model school, we have teachers that are training, and they come to us for training, and we have, they're from government schools and non-government schools. They come for a week at a time, and they are trained through us, they watch what we do, and then they take that information and they take what they've learned back into their own community, and then they start training that through with the people there as well.
And are you... Sorry.
Yep, no, you're right. Yep, go.
I was just going to ask, are you, you individually, are you working at primary or secondary level? What sort of ages are you working with?
The age that I work with is early childhood, actually. Uh-huh. So that's preschool, or actually nursery right through to preschool, and class one at times as well. So I'm working with the younger group of children. But we do, our school is equipped for nursery right through to class six, so it's just primary school.
A lot of people then go on to secondary education elsewhere?
Yes. Many children do go on to secondary education. Some will go to government schools, which the government schools often have 60 to 70 children in a class at one time.
Wow.
And some will go off onto private schools if they can afford it. Other children may just go off and do go and create a small business, or maybe they might go and work for somebody in someone's house, depending on where they're at and if they decide to go on or not. So.
Is the school quite cultural? Obviously, you're from Australia. Are there other people from other countries as well that teach at the school, or are you kind of like the lone wolf?
No, I'm not the lone ranger. I work with a diverse range of people from a lot are from New Zealand, and some are from America. So the team that I work with, or that the Joshua Foundation has of Westerners, are about 10 people. There's mostly Australians and New Zealanders, but there's a couple of Americans in there as well. We also have about 50 local workers who also, they all work with us as well. So
that's great. And so is the work that you do there paid, or do you have to rely on support from back here?
It's all support based. So none of it's paid. It's all support based. That I come back and I raise support through churches and through friends and family. And that's been part of my role this time coming back, to be able to raise that support again to get back there. So yeah.
And do you think that, like, if you did come back to Australia in 5 to 8 years, that you would continue teaching Australian kids, or is there something else that you maybe want to move into later?
Gosh, I'm not sure. There's a few things in the thoughts or the pipeline of what I could possibly do, which maybe would be to work more with a diverse range of people who maybe migrate into Australia. I'm not really sure. I haven't really planned that far ahead.
Sorry, popped that one out on you.
Yeah, that's okay. No problem. So, yeah, it's it may be that, or it may be that I would end up teaching in a school again. I'm not entirely sure. I haven't planned that far ahead in my future yet. So, yeah. We'll
that's okay. We forgive you for that. I haven't even planned what I'll be doing next week.
Oh, so that's okay. No problem.
You've got your life set pretty well. So, yeah. Carly, if people wanted to find out more about what you're doing in Africa, where can they find out more information?
Yep. So if you'd like to know more about what I do, then I have a Facebook page. So my name is Carly Greening. So and it's under Carly Greening's Tanzanian Times. And so that gives you a little bit of information on what I do, and it has photos and things. Also, you can look up the Joshua School of Arusha, which is also connected to Facebook. You can go ahead and like our page, and you can find out specifically what we do through the Joshua Foundation if you'd like to know more information. Yeah.
Awesome. And we'll put up links to those on our blog and our Facebook
Excellent.
Page.
That yes, sounds
so
great.
People will be able to find information and be able to contact you if they would like to. So thank you so much for coming on our show and sharing with us tonight, Carly.
No worries. Thank you very much for having me. So it's been great to be able to share a little bit of the heart of what I do all the way over in Africa. So thanks for having me on tonight.
Well, we wish you all the best travelling back to Africa as well.
Great. Thanks so much.
So you're on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.